Been a lot?
Yeah.
41%.
March 5th was seems like just yesterday. We have the minutes here and presented. If we everyone take a moment, it's quite a bit to read, but take a minute and see if that's how they remembered the meeting of May 5th, 2019.
March.
Excuse me. Pardon me. Long day.
Yeah, I understand.
And when you're ready, I'll call for a motion to approve.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion for the minutes as submitted.
I'll second it.
All right, we've had a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. The move. Minutes are approved. Thank you very much. Any announcements? I know that was the first part of the... I don't think anyone has any particular announcements they want to make, I'm guessing. All right. Review the Chesapeake Bay Winter Crabgrass Survey 2018-19.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. You all received a press release on the winter dredge survey that should be in your packet, and I think we gave you copies of all of my slides as well, so you can write over that to your heart's content if you have any comments or notes you want to put on those. We received the results from the survey about 2.5 weeks ago, and we've been working on them ever since, and I'll jump right in from there. Give some background about the survey. It's the same survey that's been going on since the winter of 1989-1990. It's conducted by VIMS. Ron Lipschitz is the oversees it, and Maryland DNR. They sample 1,500 random sites annually between December and March. The survey goes across 2 years. It goes December to March, so we talk about it as the 2018-2019 season. Most of the results we're going to show, it will show it as like 2019, just so you're aware of that when you see that. The objectives of the project are to describe the size and sex composition of baywide blue crab abundance. They do size by all crabs under 2.4 inches are considered juveniles. Those are crabs that are going to be exploited by the fishery by late summer into the fall and will be the following year's spawning stock. So the juveniles they saw in this survey would be the spawning stock for next year. They also develop baywide abundances based on juveniles by sex, spawning stock, adult females, adult males, various different estimates by life stage as well. They estimate exploitation rate, and exploitation is just the percentage of crabs that are being taken out of the population by harvesting. And we evaluate the stock annually. This is all done by the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee, which we're members of. All the members are, their logos are shown there below. There's about 12 or 13 of us that sit on that committee. And we'll be reviewing the results, and there'll be a final report that's a joint report between Maryland Potomac River Fisheries Commission and Virginia Marine Resources Commission will come out in June. On to results. It's nice to stand up here and say something good for a change.
Yeah.
It's we've had been here a little over a year, and we've had some tough times at some of our species. But to let you know, all the abundance estimates were higher than they were in this year. They were higher than they were in 2018. So all our abundance values were higher. The total crab abundance was at 594 million crabs. That's a 60% increase from 2018. It's the highest since 2012. The adult female abundance, which is the spawning stock, has increased 30%. It's the fifth highest, and it's in the survey's 30-year longevity that's been going on. I'll talk about the threshold and the target a little bit later on. Those are the values that we use to manage the fishery. We manage this fishery based on the spawning stock, but we're well above our threshold. It's still a little bit below our target, though. The juveniles are 93% above 2018 at 324 million crabs. It's the fourth highest since 97 and seventh highest overall. And as I said before, those juveniles will be entering the fishery this fall, and they will be the spawning stock for next year. And the adult male abundance is up about 36% overall. Just to show some of this graphically, this is for all crabs. Let you see the black dotted line is the long-term average. And I want to just show you, because we've had a major change in our fishery back in 2008 when we had the mandatory reduction of harvest 34%. So that's kind of a new regime that we have since then. And you can see as a result of that reduction in harvest and effort that we've had, you know, an increase almost immediately after that. You can kind of see an increase almost immediately after that occurred. Some of the values back in here, survey began in 1990. They had survey design changes every year through 1994, mostly with their stratification. They changed things around a little bit. So there may be some question about these higher values in the earlier years, whether or not they need to be adjusted, or are they true compared to what we're seeing now? Because right now they have three strata that they have. Previously they had as many as 52 strata, I believe. So it's some of these, when you see these older values and they're much higher, they may be because of the sampling, it may be an artifact of the sample design, so to speak. The juvenile abundance is above average as well. You can see both the long-term average and the average since that reduction in effort in 2009 are about the same, roughly about 256 million crabs. For this year, the average the juvenile crab abundance is 324 million, so it's above average by about 26%. This is just a graph showing the same graph showing the juveniles and the age 1 pluses. So you can, as I said, these crabs are going to be maturing later in the year, and you can kind of see that relationship. If there's a high abundance of juveniles, shortly after that you're going to see high abundance of adults as well. Moving on to the males, it's hard to see this because of those values I said about earlier. You have these high values, very high values here, that are probably, as I said earlier, probably related to the sampling design and sampling artifact, but the long-term average is running about 78 million pounds, and since 2009, it's a little bit lower. You can kind of see that if you took out a few of those years, probably that average is probably right in that range for those last 11 or 12 years. Moving on to females, and as I said, the adult females, how we manage the stock. The stock assessment is based on the females. We create control measures, and that's how we manage it. And it's basically showing the average on this. We're above average. The long-term average is about 126 million pounds, but since 2009, you can kind of see right as a result, we've had increases immediately. It's about 163 million pounds as an average. So for last year, we were at 100.
Numbers, isn't it? You said pounds.
I'm sorry. It is numbers, crabs. If I say pounds, I apologize. It's crabs. For 2019, it was 191 million. So we're above average, the long-term average, and we're also above average for that other stanza, the most recent stanza. And how we manage this fishery, I mean, we've talked about this every year. It's their control measures. And we have what's called a target, which is the high value, which is 215 million crabs. And that's our target. That's what we're trying to achieve. We're trying to get to that level. And our threshold is at 70 million crabs. We don't want to drop below that value. That's our bad number. So that's why I have it in red. You know, green at the top, red on the bottom. So you can kind of see some of the years we were below that. We were below that in 1999, 2001, 2002, and again, it's just slightly below it in 2014. We had a number of years below in the early 90s into the mid-90s into the 2000s. Exploitation rates were high at that point, too, as well. You'll see that in a second. So the abundance was very low here. And if we do go below that value, the stock is considered overfished. That's the definition according to the 2011 stock assessment. So we're nowhere near that value right now. We're doing well. The spawning stock is above average. It's like I said, it's well above the threshold. It's only 11% below the target. So the population, the adult female population, is looking good right now. And these are the crabs that are going to be spawning later this month or in July and August. It's all crabs bigger than 2.4 inches. So juveniles are going to be mature and females that are already mature. Moving on to the harvest results, we talked about exploitation and what the exploitation rate means. And all it is the ratio of the crabs harvested within a year divided by the average total abundance, you know, to January. So it's what percentage of the crabs are you taking out? You have a total abundance, which is measured by the dredge survey, and what is being harvested out, and you come up with a percentage. The female exploitation rate is coming from the stock assessment, so it's a sound, statistically sound value. It's coming, it's been peer-reviewed, it's been accepted, and for 2018, that value is 23.2%. The target is, like I said on the previous graph, is 25.5, and the threshold is 34. In 2017, it was 21.2. The male exploitation rate has not been reviewed in a stock assessment. It's more of a conservation trigger that the committee decided that we're going to take the second highest exploitation rate that the survey has had over its 30 years, and that's going to be our trigger, which was 33%, but now because we've had a higher value, it is now 34%. This year it was 32.9%. In 2017 it was 33.7%. This is the female control. So as I said earlier, the red line is the threshold. We don't want to go above that. If we go above that, we are considered overfishing. Overfishing is occurring. If your exploitation rate is above that threshold, overfishing is occurring. Our target is 25.5, and we're a little bit below that. Like I said, we're at 23.2, a little bit below that. Some folks might say, well, you know, there's some room. We can fish a little bit more. And people are nodding their head. I hear it. I've only been here a little bit more than a year, but I've already caught on to that one. The problem with that is there's a lot of unknowns here. We have dead discards that aren't accounted for. We have recreational fishery that's not accounted for. And we have some issues with the catchability in the juveniles that, you know, have not been completely accounted for. So staying slightly below that green value is a good thing. I mean, it's, you know, you want to, because it's a precautionary approach of not going over that so that you're in that exploit, you know, you're exploiting above the overfishing, above our target, so to speak. So, you know, our goal is, you know, keeping it under that 25.5. I think that's a fairly good point to be at right now, because, you know, if we go over that value, then we have to start considering what management actions we're going to take to adjust accordingly. So, this is the male exploitation rate, and as I said, it's a conservation trigger. The males were not part of the stock assessment in that regard, and as a result, it's just a value that the stock assessment committee said, okay, we'll look at the 30 years of data we have. What's the highest exploitation rate? We'll take the second highest, and that is our trigger. It was triggered last year, but it's come down a little bit below that since for 2018. These are values through 2018 because that's last year we have commercial harvest for. These are commercial landings. I don't know if you can see that. I hope it's big enough. If it's not, you have it in your table. It's showing it for the years of the survey starting in 1990 by jurisdiction, Maryland, Virginia, Potomac River Fisheries Commission, and overall for the Bay. The female exploitation rates and the male exploitation rates. If the exploitation rate is in red, it meant it was above the threshold. Okay, it was above the threshold. Let's just give you an indication of that. 2018 is shown in yellow. We caught 55 million crabs was the estimate that was harvested that year. It's right around the average from 2008 to 2018, below average for this whole time series, but we've had we've had that shift. You know, we had that shift in 2008, so we're not going to see those kind of values anymore because we've had that reduction. Virginia's harvest is about 21 million pounds. It's on par for average, a little bit below the average for the last 11 years of 22 million pounds, but in the ballpark of where we were the last few years. This is showing the same thing just by in a graphic form. You can kind of see those very lean years that we had in the early 2000s where harvest was very low, and we also had a couple of years in 2013, 2014. One of those years was an overfished year. The status was overfished. Overall, for the last 10 years, Maryland is harvesting about 54%, about 54.5% of the crabs. Virginia, about 40%. The Potomac River Fisheries Commission, about 5.5%. And this is just showing the harvest by state, the males and females. Males are on the top. The red bars are the male harvest. In pounds, millions of pounds, and the red line is the percent of total bay male harvest. So you can kind of see in Maryland they're catching roughly about, you know, 62% of the crabs. They're catching 62% of the males is what that's saying. And the blue lines on that are showing the Virginia portion of that for males, and we're catching the complement of that of, you know, 36, 37%, whatever equals 100%. More importantly is the female harvest on the bottom. What we've seen for the last 4 years is we're seeing Maryland having an increasing trend in female abundance. The last 4 years, it's steadily going up, while, you know, our portion of it will go down accordingly. So they're catching, Maryland is catching more and more female crabs. I'm not sure, maybe you guys can help put some light on that, why that's occurring. But, you know, it's pretty strong trend from here to there. It's continually going up. Their portion of the catch, it's in females.
Go ahead, Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any numbers on what time of the year it is that they're catching the largest percentage of
them? We can check that. Not here. This is just from the report. We could check that, though.
I think it's September, October.
Okay.
Lieutenant?
Yes, sir.
Catching them mostly on the eastern shore side over there, north of Chrisfield and stuff.
Okay.
Does Maryland have any sanctuaries, crab sanctuaries?
No.
That's why they're catching all the crabs. You want my opinion?
Crabs, 7 days.
What kind of limits do they
75%
have?
75% of the bay sanctuaries, so we can't touch them. All the crabs are going up in deep water, you know. That's why they're going up.
900 chances to get more money for
crabs. Simple.
Yeah, we just figured, you know, it's clear. You can see there's an increase there.
Yep.
So.
All of it.
Yeah.
We're just making it better for everybody.
I just got one last slide. I mean, I mentioned this three times already. The juvenile abundance from the dredge survey, they're going to be the crabs that start to enter the fishery this fall, you know, late summer, early fall, and they'll be the spawning stock for next year. And you can kind of see this is showing the trend where that abundance and how it relates to the baywide harvest. Probably would have a better fit if I just had the August harvest, August through December harvest, but I couldn't get that in time for this. But it kind of shows, as you know, there's a trend where when the abundance of juveniles is up, the commercial harvest is going to be up as well. So,
Tim?
Yes, sir.
Any other questions?
The juvenile crab, are they, is that male and female?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The harvest is only going to go up as much as the limits will allow it.
We'll talk about that later.
They got a big one that's in Maryland.
I'm not saying anything changed. I'm just, you know, I was sitting there looking at the numbers from back in the day before we had the limits. I don't know if we'll ever get to, will the harvest limits let us ever get to 70 million pounds with the number of crabbers we have now? It's just math. Even if the crabs were there.
2010, almost 70 million. Maryland mainly bounced a lot in 2009, 2010. And when you look at this abundance data, everything looks fairly similar to 2010.
Well, you look at the pounds, and it's down there in the 20s, and it used to be up in the 40s and 50s and stuff.
We certainly have reduced.
I don't think
effort.
It's possible for us to ever get there again.
It's Reduced effort.
Yeah, we have reduced effort. There's no doubt we have reduced.
Dr. Lucius.
Yes, if I could just make a little comment on that. If you look at what was happening in the early 2000s, we were getting about the same harvest, but with twice as high, maybe even more exploitation rates. So what's happening now, because abundance went up, is with that lower number, we're getting equal amounts in terms of poundage. Whether or not we get back up to what you're saying, the problem with that is I wonder if that was...
Well, there's a number of factors involved in it here. Number one, who's going to buy the crabs? And you know, because we don't have the infrastructure anymore. We were catching more this year than the limit would allow this spring, but it didn't make any difference because within a couple of weeks the market collapsed.
Mm-hmm. I think over time we may be able to get a little bit higher. Right now we got to just be careful.
Oh sure, I understand. I don't want those numbers to be construed as being a exploitation problem, because you're only going to be able to exploit so much because of two things: the controlling factor of the limits and the controlling factor of the available market. Make any sense?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I got a question.
Yes,
I got a question for Rob. Many years ago, remember Sergeant Wright, wasn't our threshold at $200 million and we bumped it up to $220? It seems like me a long time ago that happened. We called it a green line or a blue line, but we had 200 million pounds, and then for some reason the MRC bumped it up to 220.
I think that's when the sexes were combined, males and females, in 2005, and there was worries in the Bay about how things were low. So they came up with the idea that if they could get to 200 million, males and females combined
together,
that would promote good reproductive success. That's what happened back then. And then, of course, as they went on, that year, at the very late year, there was a stock assessment done, one of these mathematical stock assessments. But then in 2011, all the emphasis became on the female crab. And so that was equivalent, more or less, to the 200.
So what you're showing us now, everything on here, is male and female combined. Is that correct?
That's just
what
females.
You just said.
That's just females.
Yeah.
The stock assessment is only based on these adult females.
But 200, what was that based on at the time?
Male and female.
Female.
So that was based on vote.
Mm-hmm.
So we bumped it to 220,
yeah,
and did away with the male and just made the female 220. Is that correct?
It was, okay, so you saw what Pat had. He had 25.5% on the exploitation, mm-hmm, on the target, 34% for the threshold. Back then, it was 51% on the threshold. Everything was higher that way as well. So there was a trade-off. So, I mean, we've looked, and they still do run the male and female a little bit in Maryland, just to take a look to see where they is. There's not that much difference. In the reference points,
okay,
not much difference. Although, if there's ever like this full blown stock assessment where you bring in the outside help to do it and everything else, and it's not just in the Bay, they will run both male and female and female as part of the results. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Any other questions?
Yeah. Could you go back to the abundance graph?
Which one?
The one that before this one.
You want that one instead?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 220 million. I tell you, that's a difficult number.
It's 215 is what it is, but
yeah. It's never impossible. Look, we've had 3 years in the last 20 years. We've had 3 years in the last 20 to meet that.
That's
because
they bumped it up.
Yeah.
I told you it was 200.
Yeah.
They bumped it up.
Mm-hmm.
If you brought that back to 200 like it used to be years ago, it would be a different story.
Yeah.
Your average would be totally different.
Yeah.
A lot of difference between 200 and 215.
Yeah.
Because there was 1, 2, 3 above and 1, 2, 3, 4 below.
Yeah, and you're saying the ones back in the 90s that you're not real sure about.
Well, that's up to here.
Yeah.
These values here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can understand. Okay. It just seems like it's a very high, lofty goal, you know. I mean, is it even attainable, you know?
Right. Ron, you had some...
What I would suggest is if you want us to revisit that, to recommend that we have a new stock assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Because It is a little bit puzzling to me that when you look at the exploitation rate, we're below the target. And what we should be doing when the fishery is consistent with the population, we should be sort of bouncing around the target.
Right.
Exactly.
Below. So the possibility is there that maybe if we redo it in some way, that we might be able to get that target down a little bit lower so that we're actually bouncing around. So what I mentioned last time is that for both the exploitation rate and for the overfish, both the overfishing and overfish targets, we want to be bouncing around the targets. Not, you don't want to just be above or below. You want to sort of bounce around. So I think there are a number of us who feel that it is time for another update of the dock assessment.
I agree.
But that will come from the jurisdiction as to whether or not to go ahead with it.
Okay.
Further questions? Yes, sir.
Chairman. Couple observations. This slide in particular, if you all look at the average that has been concluded since 2009 to present, it looks like there's an appreciable differentiation between those 9-10 years versus the previous 20. It's not the same ratio for the juvenile male. You don't mind pulling that up?
It's not. You're right.
It's not even close. So, does anybody have any insight into what's going on with that particular situation? Because that's disturbing to me, knowing that Maryland is catching more males than we are now, and now they're starting to catch as many females as we are now. And I know the brunt of that effort for that female abundance is because of what Virginia did in those last 10 years. I know it.
So, the reason we see that, and actually we analyze the data on that, and it shows very clearly that in 2008, management actions were really directed completely to females, the spawning stock, not to the males. And we saw the response, right? We saw in 2009 an increase, and it's remained at a higher level now, whereas the males increased a little bit, but not much. That's because management actions were management actions were directed at females,
right.
Spawning stocks. What I see there is there might be an issue in allocation. And so, again, that would argue for having, again, maybe an updated stock assessment to see what the exploitation rates are in the two states. We've been talking about spatial issues and dealing with those in the stock assessment. And in my view, the time has come. It's going to be a difficult issue politically, right? Talking about allocation between the two states, how you determine that. But it may be time to at least get information from the stock assessment on spatially specific.
Right. Yes, sir.
I tell you one thing that's happening while Maryland's catching more females. I've got three Maryland boats crabbing right on side of me right now. And they come down in Virginia, and they hit the spring fishery, and of course they follow the crabs up as they go up. I mean they got everything going for them up there. I mean they're fishing a lot of pots. So I know that's part of the reason. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up.
Sure.
We would put those females back in the water so we'd have recruitment, so we'd have more juveniles, so we'd have more males.
Right.
And we're not getting them. We're catching them.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm worried about, because we're catching them and the watermen aren't making as much on those, now they're going to lean themselves over on the females that have replenished and they're going to start catching those. And we're just beating our head against the wall, putting them back in the water so that whatever's the most they're going to go catch. They've caught all the males, and obviously they have more males because the water quality and the water salinity is better for them, so they're going to catch them all.
Yeah.
And now, whether they're coming down the bay or there's more females going up the bay because of salinity or temperature, whatever it is, we're catching them. And I hope they're looking at this objectively as I am, because it just seems like to me we've got to protect all facets of these things, not just the females. Yeah, we have to have the females to put the replenishment back into the stock, but it just lends itself that if you don't take care of all aspects of it, and overfish one, it's going to put more pressure on the other. It's got to be balanced. That's my viewpoint.
I think that's a good point. Rob?
Yeah, so something from a few years ago when I was really looking through everything on this survey, from the last assessment, 2011,
right,
the ratio of juvenile male to female is 48% male, 52% female. So when you look at the winter dredge survey each year, you would expect to find something close to that. The only year that I remember where that was the case was 2003, where there was somewhere close to, you know, almost a 52-48 or 54-46. Other years, it's skewed towards females in the dredge survey, and Ron may have a recollection of that as well. But I mean, you know, that one single year, 2003. Now, you would expect if the juveniles are almost 50-50, that when the survey is done after fisheries have occurred, you should come somewhere close to 50-50.
Yeah.
You know, that got sort of pushed aside a few years ago. I brought it up, but I mean, that's okay. But that's something we have to keep in mind.
Yes. Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Rob. That's a good point.
It's reiterating what Johnny is pointing out.
Mr. Nichols.
To go along with what you said, in Virginia's end of the bay, do you catch as does Virginia's part of the survey catch as many males as Maryland's does in their part of the bay because of salinity differences?
I don't think
everything is moving out of the tributaries down to the southeast.
Male densities are the same. The abundance is another metric, because that's then it's per area, per unit area. So I have to actually take a look at the data file itself to see if that's the case or not.
The other question I had, I was thinking about when this first came out, and we were talking about this earlier with the amount of rainfall we had, how much has that driven abundance out of the tributaries into the main stem of the bay and further down the bay?
We had about 10 inches above normal last year.
Yeah, I understand that, but what effect does that have on your...
thinking about that a good bit, and so now that we have data, I'm planning to actually take a look at that, to look at the spatial distribution, because I think you're dead on. I would have expected there would be a shift, particularly for females, but that could also be true for males and juveniles in the tributaries. They could have shifted down.
Considering
we're just now, how do we have the full data set? How we can look at that?
Well, I was talking to Ken earlier. We all of us crabbing at the lower end of the bay have caught more males this year than we've caught in a long time.
That makes sense.
I mean, they were catching blue cats at Kipta Peak. So,
yeah,
right.
So
the only time I've seen this many males at the lower end of the bay was back before the keep on opening when it was still closed because they were just running out of the James.
And just to make one other point, the reason that we focus on the female, the main reason is because we have a significant spawning stock improvement relationship. Granted, it only explains about half of the variation we see from year to year. The other half is going to be explained by environmental conditions and so on, Mother Nature basically. But for males, we don't have any evidence that they are as important, anywhere near as important as the females in terms of producing young. Because males can mate with numerous females, then we think that you can have fewer males basically service the females as necessary. And there have been a few studies called sperm limitation. You know, are there enough sperm out there with the males to fertilize all the females' eggs? And the evidence right now is in general that there are, that we're not sperm limited. There are one or two studies that feel there might be some, but in general, and this is true actually in general across other species, like for lobsters, crabs, it's very difficult to find any evidence of sperm limitation.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Is it possible that we're losing more of the male crabs, like in the springtime and stuff, because they're swimming around more of them up in the rivers and stuff where all the catfish and all the other stuff is, instead of them being out and about?
It could be.
I mean, when you definitely catch a lot more catfish whenever the peeler run is on.
Mary Fabrizio from VIMS is doing a study right now on that. They're looking at gut contents of catfish further down in the rivers where crabs are plentiful.
Go where the peeler pads are, open them up. You'll see the bellies are full of them. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when we get the results from that, it'll be interesting to see. It's quite possible. I mean, blue cats eat everything.
I agree. All right.
Okay.
Can you put that Maryland-Virginia snapshot up there again together?
That one? Or the one by sex?
The one where Maryland's increasing their catch in the last 6 to 8 years on the females. Yeah.
I'm getting razor.
We're going down and they're going up.
Well, it's 100%, so if they go up, we have to go down.
Right.
It's a percentage of the total in the bay.
I mean, the guys that bring razor clams to us, they're catching, they tell me in the fall, they catch 80 and 90
bushels. Because all the pucks into rubles.
Mm-hmm. And they have 80, 90 bushels of females to set 800 pots. They grab 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, they get a lot of chances.
Mm-hmm. Maryland does.
All right.
Males, we've gone up the last 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, a little bit.
Proportionally,
yeah.
Whereas females have gone down at the same time. So,
I think a lot of that's from not crabbing in the bay.
Yeah.
Not allowed to
go
in the bay.
Yeah. And these Maryland watermen, you guys can speak to this. A Maryland waterman can come down in Virginia and catch our crabs, and it's reported as a Maryland catch,
and they just
a Virginia
them.
Catch.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the actual landing take place?
I don't know.
It's the landing. Go back to Maryland.
They have a license here, which they have.
They're landed in Virginia.
So what about in the fall of the year when they're off there in the middle of the bay and we're on a 27
foot
on
there?
They catch them in Virginia waters with a Virginia permit. They go on our Virginia chart, not Maryland.
They should be.
What about when they get landed in
so you can't say the Marylanders are coming down here catching the crabs because it's not on their report. It's on ours. So, how are they catching more females?
Because once they go up into the middle of the
week, I think we can find, like I saw a couple of years ago, that September and October get really big in Maryland for the females.
Ours was traditionally big, and the last few Octobers have not been very good. Well, the limits changed too. A lot of guys have gone ocean and had to quit.
They migrate down.
Slow in October, beginning by the end of the winter, good. They've already.
It's complicated. There's no doubt about it. Maryland's a part of it, and that's part of the issue. You know, it furthers the complication.
They're getting the better part of it.
Yeah, they may well be. I don't disagree with that.
I've felt like that for years. Is there any?
Damn sure they can't.
I've been on this committee since when? 1986, I think. And I've always felt like that we were under pressure from Maryland to comply with their demands through the Bi-State Blue Crab Committee. What do we have now? CBSAC?
CBSAC.
And it's always been comply with Maryland's demands and Potomac River's demands. And then it seems like now we're to the point where we're not reaping the benefits as much as they are, even though we're, you know, doing a whole lot more individually as fishermen than the guys up there are.
Mm-hmm.
Because of their lack of limits on pots and harvest. How do we put pressure on them to get some equivalency in this, what we're contributing to rebuilding this resource?
We're just breeding crabs for them.
Well, someone earlier mentioned allocation. And if you remember about 4 years ago, in what they call the Sustainable Fisheries GIT, Goal Implementation Team, there was an allocation issue being pushed by Chesapeake Bay Foundation and Environmental Defense Fund. And all the jurisdictions at the end said, move it away. We're not going to talk about that. So that's about as close as it came to putting all the information out there and trying to figure out an allocation. But there were a lot of complications with the proposals they had. Even down to, do you start limiting entry even more in Virginia? So I know that was circulated among committee members back at the time, and I think every committee, whether it was Potomac, Maryland, or Virginia, really didn't want to pursue that route. So there has to be some other way to do it, because, you know, if you look at the historical data, you know, in the 70s and 80s, Virginia averaged 40 to 45 million pounds. But we know we don't have that kind of effort anymore.
That's the point I was making earlier.
Yeah. And our effort is very stable since about 2003. I mean, you have little ups and downs.
I don't think
not
it
a lot.
We
where Maryland has over 2,000 licensees. Now, a portion of those are the small timers. I don't know what the portion is, but a portion of those are the big rigs, too.
Well, you know, I hear these complaints all the time. Marshall and Mark and some others that are not here tonight would know more about it than I do because they're over there and look at it. What I heard this spring was those guys are coming down and they've got so many pots and licenses on the boats and everything that it would take them 5 days with their limits to go through their pots. And somebody was even talking on social media, they got to carry an extra man or two on the boat to call out all the dead stuff because it's taking them so long to go through their pots, and they won't pick the pots up. And then they're practicing their same way they crab at home all during the middle of the summer down here in the spring. And you can do that in the middle of the summer up there because you've only got a few crabs in a pot, but with what we were catching this spring, it ended up being a big waste. How do you, that's the equivalency that I'm talking about. You know, why am I crabbing 255 pots and the same human body on the same boat up there crabs 800 pots, even if he doesn't do them every day? And he doesn't have the required limits on his catch that I have. And yet, whenever we go to one of these meetings, everybody's up there giving me the stink eye because I'm the guy that's got to comply with Maryland's demands. It's almost like you know, do you remember the day that I got in that argument with Taylor Murphy and Fred Fisher and all of us down there in the middle of the General Assembly?
Yes.
That I embarrassed everybody so much that he pulled a bill. But the point I was making down there with Fred Fisher and them was about how pusillanimous a group that we had down here that they couldn't keep the Marylanders out of the bay. And, of course, he got mad, walked out of the building. And I was successful in getting the bill pulled, but, man, I got the black spot put on me from that for the rest of my life.
It's a big challenge because Maryland got out in front of us in 1979. There was no internet, no communication among agencies.
Right.
They started to establish the TFL, the total fishing license back then, and then they came back in 97 and made it even stricter where you had to apprentice and do all that up there. So they beat us to the punch, quite frankly. The only thing that could happen would be a long haul is something similar that we did with our guide license in a recreational fishery where you build criteria, so you have to meet certain criteria whether you're a Marylander or Virginia. You can't discriminate. But the way that fell out...
Listen, I understand all that. I'm talking about pot limits and catch limits that we have to adhere to, and they're full bore up there.
Yeah.
And then they have the nerve to come down here and say, through ROM or whoever's, you know, our representative on these committees, you have to comply with these numbers because we have all the females down here at the lower end of the bay. So you have to comply. Same thing with rockfish and everything else. You know, and it's been that way since I've been involved in this.
Yeah. So, I mean, we need to profile who the harvesters are, not individuals, but profile how many harvesters are here in Virginia waters, and then it's got to be a political solution. I mean, that's all I can
Well, that's
say.
It. It's going to be political.
Yeah. So, but we can do that, you know.
I mean, right. Okay, I'm just, it seems like now we have a little data to go with our emotional feelings on this.
Pete and myself have talked about this for years and years and years. This all started 30, 35 years ago when the Marylanders first showed up. Back then, we fished 250, big rig was 300. And then when they showed up, it was terrible. We got in the boat, Jeff Crockett and a bunch of us come in and talked to Mr. Pruitt. And that's when the plot limits and the bushel limits started. Merlin started that. We didn't have a problem until they showed up with all their pots. We fished 250, 300 was a big rig. They come down with 600, 700 way back.
Yeah.
And that's where our problem started originally, with the limits and the times and how many pots you can fish. And it's still that way today, 35 years later, and nothing's changed. You've heard me ask this many, many, many times. You did tell me once. How many tickets have ever been written out for someone having over the limit of pots? I asked that for years and years and years, and then maybe 3 or 4 years, you told me one.
Well, I think there was another one recently, but the problem was it took two law enforcement officers.
So we're talking the 25-year period, too.
Right. It's very difficult to catch these people, even if with supreme effort.
Right, I understand that. I mean, I do. I understand entirely. But we talk about Merlin, and they're the ones that call.
I'm just talking about trying to get equivalency on their hand.
They're only here for a couple months, but they're doing it up there, and there's no sanctuary.
I mean, they're just not. It's a sacrifice as much as we are. And they're able to enforce the laws. I've never felt like they were.
1,100?
That's how the scheme is paying off.
Years and years.
I mean, the scheme has been paying off, but now we have.
So that's an easy
answer. I agree with our feelings. Get on.
Well, Pat? Any further details to your presentation?
No, that's it.
Rom, is anything else you'd like to chime in? You've heard some discussion.
I got a question for Rob.
One thought came up.
Yes, sir.
Is that if there really is a waste problem in their pots, that that's something that we could work with the Marine Police to try to figure out, okay, how can you go to certain pots of theirs versus ours?
And do it.
Pull them up and see how many dead ones there are. Are you allowed, is the Marine Police allowed to pull up a pot?
Oh, yeah, check the call.
Oh, yeah.
So, I didn't see where they had that much old guy.
Pot tending.
Where?
Well.
Yeah, where you actually go and measure how many dead crabs there are, that they really are using a longer soak period.
How
are you going to
know? Right.
That's what you're going to have. Because I don't know if you remember, but the study that we did a few years ago on female mortality, what we found is that the mortality occurs in the pot, not on the deck.
Right.
Mortality, the crabs are already, whether it's due to aggression, crowding, everything, we saw no effect of deck-related stress. It was all happening in the pot.
Especially on sponge crab. Especially sponge crabs. The females are pregnant, they're evil. Like a female.
Okay. I think it's, Rob, do you think it's something we can try to...
I mean, there could be a curse generation, but the Marine Police has maybe 32 officers in the field, and some of those are on shift and everything else. It's not as... We have like 8 vacant positions right now. I mean, it's tough.
Yes.
But Ron is right about the the situation of warm water and mortality of crabs. And that's why when Pat was showing you that exploitation rate, that's not even figured in.
Right.
But now the Chesapeake Bay Trust. You know, Tom Miller, you probably heard his name. And I don't know who else is involved, but they've been looking at some of the Maryland discard situation, and eventually we'll be there, but it's going to take a while because they wouldn't even put that type of information. They didn't even propose it for the assessment that never happened,
right.
So we can't put that in there. And then the assessment never happened, and it was a financial situation as to why it didn't happen. Back in 2008 with the disaster relief money, each agency was able to afford $150,000 for that assessment, and NOAA was able to afford the rest. And I think that was $700,000. This last assessment was about $450,000, I think. But there was no disaster relief money. NOAA didn't have the funds, so that's what's going on.
Okay. Ron?
And just to remind you, the only really solid information we have on bycatch mortality is for the dredge fishery, which we did as well with some of the disaster relief money. So we have some minor studies, small-scale studies in terms of pop mortality, and some of the numbers I just pointed out, but none of that goes into the assessment.
No. So it would have some merit to be looking at.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well.
You've all been through the rodeo, so you know later this month we'll be requesting a public hearing from the commission. And then June, they'll be making their vote to set the July regulations. Last meeting we had in March, there were a couple motions made on things you would like to look at, with the understanding that nothing would be pursued until we were ready to go to the commission. So now that we know the results, we can revisit them a little here, go back into the discussions. So the two motions to pursue were a longer season and adjusting the fall bushel limit. So you guys have thoughts? Any other management discussions you'd like to talk about? Any other reactions you think could be warranted at this time? Feel free.
Thank you.
I have a question for staff. Rob said that when I asked about the not having a date on opening the season, your response was depending on the results of the winter dredge survey. So what do you think now? When I made a motion to do away with the spring opening date.
I'm not sure that's what I was thinking about. I think I was thinking more about December than that.
I was talking about early spring.
Yeah, I know. And we did have a conversation, yep. And at first I said, well, wait a minute, how's the Marine Police going to know what the temperature is in certain areas?
Well, I said do away with the date.
I know what you told me. So I have thought about that. My perspective is I'm coming back to law enforcement now. They need to have a schedule. In other words, they can't operate without a schedule. So if your area on the shore starts earlier or the western shore starts earlier, Marine Police can't respond because they haven't scheduled all that. They're different than fisheries management. I mean, they have dedicated scheduling. So I think that's a no-win situation. I mean, I understand the perspective that, you know, crabs are going to show up in different places at different times, but the Marine Police can't operate that way.
So you won't support that?
I won't support that, but we can talk about December.
How about?
All you can do is start it February the 1st, close it January.
Yeah. I mean, now you're welcome to make any proposals you want.
That way you won't have to worry about it
from the committee. I mean, that's part of what you do as the committee. But I don't think that's going to go very far for staff on that one because of the situation I just described.
So you're saying that you may go along by changing the date, but not just having no date, but having a date. If you go along with having a date, maybe we can back up some then.
Well, we backed up in 2012 to March the 1st. I think that was 2012. It was horrible weather. It didn't do anything. I understand the market situation by backing up a little bit. You know, I'd rather hear you make a proposal to back it up a little bit, but I don't know how that's going to fly with the commission.
Would you agree with March the 1st?
No.
You wouldn't support that?
No.
February 1st?
No.
15th?
No. I think the whole reason is if you look at the history of what we did, we had no season, just as you know. 1994, because we didn't have good information, the commission set April 1 as the start of the season. That lasted all the way from 1994 to 2007. 2007, the season was set to March 17th. And that's pretty much where it's been, except for that one year we went to March the 1. We can recommend, you can give us the information, we'll recommend it. That's all we can do. But I think March 1 is is kind of tough. I have to tell you overall, did you read, who read the press article? Okay. Did you see the word caution in there a few times?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hold up.
Well, so you can imagine what that means. That means that 5 years ago, we're running around because we had depleted stock, barely. You know, barely depleted. We had depleted stock, was overfished, and we, all the jurisdictions got together and said, well, we'll do a 10% reduction in harvest. And I said, well, that's not exactly how you work on exploitation directly. But we did it. Crabs are resilient. They bounce back. But there's caution. So there's caution from what you read in the press release. The other thing that I know is we keep talking about an annual crop.
March 15th.
Is there some way that the jurisdictions, it's not going to be just us, that the jurisdictions can get away from an annual crop, which is essentially the way this has been managed. It's, you know, an annual crop. I mean, so how do we get beyond that so that the juveniles, well, one thing about juveniles, and I shouldn't have gotten started, but one thing about the 543 million juveniles, that was from December 15th to March 15th, right?
Mm-hmm.
So after March 15th, how many juveniles are there now? And how many juveniles are there going to be going around the corner all the way to August before they recruit to the fishery? So it's a nice number. It only relates to the other years where there were nice high numbers, but you don't know what's happened to those juveniles. You don't know how much predation's going on and everything else. So we're left with the females. We really still are managing those females, the age one plus, or the females that are going to spawn later this month or in the summer. And, you know, if we're able to save juveniles enough to spawn next time, that's the whole idea. You want those juveniles to recruit to the next spawning stock. So it's not a straight line. It's not horribly difficult because you have juveniles and you have those that become adults. So, I mean, I don't mind that you have the propositions, but I think it's going to be tough to sell March 1 to the commission.
I don't understand when you say the police enforcement. I don't understand what's the difference between the 15th and the 1st. That's a problem with the MRC police. What is the difficulty of 15 days difference?
Well, because there's caution in the wind right now. I mean, that's why I pointed you to the press release. And I think we can propose different dates. What we're going to do with anything you propose, December extension, whatever it might be, we can sort of project what amount of extra harvest that is than we had. I think the last time we did that, we came up with 200,000 pounds. It wasn't even 200,000 pounds. We went to December 21st, if you remember. We went as far as December 21st. So what you have to do is make your proposals. We'll have the data to say, okay, this is going to produce this much extra, whatever extra harvest is. I mean, we'd like to have it anyway. You heard from Pat, we're pretty close to the 10-year average. So then we figure out what that would be, and then the commission's going to ask, well, do you think that that is risky or not? Right? I mean, that's what the commission always asks. Do you think there's a risk there? The other part that you asked about, Marshall, is not so much about risk. It's about being able to monitor the activities of the fishery. And I know law enforcement can't operate with just sort of where it happens, when it happens. They're not going to be able to do that.
Well, then that tells me that, that no matter what date we do, either in the spring or in the fall, it makes any difference. If we're going to extend it in the fall, it's the same thing as that. Going back in the spring, you're going to say the same thing. If we want to go to December 15th, you're going to come back with the same story you just told me about earlier in the spring.
Okay, so in 2012...
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
some
I understand
of
y'all
want to extend it in December. Well, some of us want to get in early spring. So we can't get early spring. You just said that. So what's because of law enforcement? So
law enforcement needs a date, Marshall. You can set the date back below March 17th, but you have to realize that in 2012, when everything was very good on the conditions to crab, we doubled the effort and we had 2.5 million pounds. From March 17th to March 31st.
Yeah.
And by the time May was here, where were the crabs?
I understand what you're saying, but when I recommended March 1st, you said no.
No, I don't say no.
Well, you said you wouldn't support it.
I've
been here a long time. If you support it, we can get it done. If you don't support it,
you're an advisor, and staff's an advisor.
I mean,
that's the way it works, and that's the way it should be. And if anyone has real,
do we have to make a tail end of the season date decision now?
July.
I mean, does the commission have to make it?
We can meet in June.
And the reason I ask that is we know what abundance was as far as a crab is concerned this spring. But we don't know what kind of shed we're going to have
right this
year, and we don't know what we're going to see later on. And it might be to the point where we don't want to put a whole bunch of more pressure on them in the fall. But it might be that we find out that by the end of the summer or in September, that even that fall shed might be good. Why are we required to do this now instead of doing it in September or something?
Only because
it's simpler to do.
July 5th through July 4th regulation.
Right.
If the scenario you have was something that really was worth going forward with emergency regulation, that's the way you'd have to do it. And the commission would have to say, okay, we've got enough evidence to do an emergency regulation. This is the welfare of the seafood industry. That's what emergency regulation is.
Mm-hmm. So we would probably be better off to say, okay, we're going to change it to whatever the committee agrees to as far as an extension or change in limits. And then if we find that that's not going to be productive or beneficial in the long run, we could come back and say we don't want to do that.
Sure.
I mean, that's theoretically.
You have to have the same chance that any other fishery has.
Right.
To adaptive.
I mean, instead of doing it that way, you do it, you go backwards.
It'd be better to have your placeholder, because frankly, I don't think the December extension has been that productive.
No.
The 3 years that we had it wasn't that productive.
Not that I remember.
But it's good to have that placeholder. Okay. And then we're going to talk about bushel limits, and I'm hearing contrasting ideas on the bushel limits.
Well, here's where I'm getting at on this. There's been so many people that have left the fishery in the fall that it might not have looked productive because in the last number of years they all went oystering.
Mm-hmm.
And that looks like that's been pretty much beat to death in some areas. So there might be some folks that don't want to go oystering. Maybe there's enough product in the blue crab fishery for them to work on without it being detrimental to the health of the fishery.
Sure.
It might help the other end out.
I mean, they're forced to go. Sanford's
got something. Yeah, and we're trying to protect the females in the fall of the year also, right? But aren't we seeing a trend of more males being harvested in December? Because I was looking at some paperwork that I received from y'all, and it shows actually an increase in the male harvest. And
yeah, I don't think we've exactly looked at male-female in December yet. We could.
Well, I mean, what I saw, this was, I think, a couple
Did
of years
you see
ago
that?
Or a year ago or something other, where there were actually a larger harvest of males.
Yeah. But, I mean, really, if you want to propose something earlier than March 17th, you just have to propose it, vote on it. If you want to propose something in December, you have to vote on it. And if you want to change the bushel limits, which I've heard some in industry say, no, don't change the bushel limits in the fall, November. Because you remember what we did? We came in and when there was that depletion, and it used to be just the latter part of November had the lower bushel limits. Now it's all of November.
It kills it.
So do you want to modify that? Those are really the three things. And, you know, again, Marshall, I understand your position on sort of opening with where the crabs start to be.
Well, based on weather. Not
I understand that.
Based on water temperature.
Okay.
Anybody
so
else, Ms. Sanford?
I'm going to leave you with those three ideas. And, you know, you need to make the decision. And you've got a commission. The commission's going to make the ultimate decision.
Mm-hmm. But what I'm scared of, I mean,
aren't you supposed to be looking at the economics of the fishery also in the management practices or not?
I wish we could.
I mean,
I wish we could.
I thought that was part of what you're supposed to look at.
Not even in the federal fisheries, they have to look at the economics, but frankly, that's not what it's an EIS, but that's not really what's paid for. ASMSC, they're not looking at the economics, and at the states, you're not looking at the economics, and it's the number one thing to look at.
Yeah.
The market's the number one.
I'd rather have a closure right now for 2 weeks.
That's why you like March.
You know, yeah, because we get good money for our stuff, and as soon as everybody starts catching, the price goes down, and we're giving away our product. That's all we're doing.
All right. I got one more question.
Rob, is Merlin, they close that fishery November 30th also?
I think they closed it earlier than that, like November 15th. But I'd have to check that. But I know that they've done that off and on. But, you know, really in November, what's going on in Maryland in September and October?
Mr. Cox got one.
I'm going to make one more point. Pete and myself been here a long time, and I've learned one thing, and I've said it before. If we're going to come up with something that we want to either the bushel limits or early spring or later fall, and, you know, we vote on it. We've got to try to satisfy him, too, because I know many, many times if you can get staff and him to go along with you, you've got about a 90% chance of getting it done. If he doesn't agree, and he doesn't agree, you got about a 30% chance of getting it done. So that's what we need to focus on. If we're going to come up with some decision, we got to have their support, too. Because he'll stand up in front of the commission and say, the crab committee voted unanimously, such, 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 and such. Then he'll turn around and say, but staff does not go with that. And you can rest assured that the commission is going to go with what these people say. That's what they get paid for. So that's part of my speech.
All right.
Good speech.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Right. Yes, sir.
What would, for Mr. O'Reilly's, what would be y'all's take on adjusting the fall bushel limit for November and keeping them the same? I mean, what's the likelihood of that?
To change those?
To just keep it the same as it is, you know what I mean? To keep it, instead of dropping it back, to maintain it.
Carry through from October through November.
Yeah, just carry, yeah.
But change the bushel limits late in November.
Yeah, or just leave it, just let November be the same as October for the month.
So with that and with any of the dates you propose, I mean, it really comes down to, does the commission think that by increasing the harvest that that is going to have any sort of negative effects? And then if staff finds out it's a small amount, and I think Alex already looked at some of the bushel limits during that time period, right?
It looks like for November harvest, by pot category, 2 to 5% of trips reach their limit, their bushel limit.
So that's the kind of information the commission needs to hear.
Repeat that one more time.
2 to 5% of the limits in November are met.
Two to five percent of trips, they reached their bushel limit, and that's broken down by pot category.
2 out of 5.
2 to 5%.
2 to 5. Okay.
So almost never does anybody get a limit in the fall.
But
you got a lot of
people.
Almost never does anybody get a limit in the fall, is what you're saying. 2% of the time.
In November.
But you got a lot of people crabbing by themselves too. They're never going to catch the limit.
So
the whole thing down.
Mr. Diggs, that's the kind of information that we have to provide the commission, as well as...
So if only 2 to 3% of people have reached their limit, adjusting the limit really shouldn't be that big of a deal then.
Yeah.
If only 2 to 3% of the crabbers are going to do it, what's that going to hurt?
That's certainly one way to look at it, right?
Yeah. I'm just saying it.
Same thing with December. I don't recall
evidence to support that.
It's not a,
you can't make it on that many
crabbers. Have evidence to support.
Well, the thing about it is, even if you increase the limit... and somebody doesn't reach the limit every day, they might be catching 5 or 6 more baskets on a $40 or $50 market. And you do that 5 days a week, and you've increased your gross enough.
And it takes pressure off the oyster fishery.
You know, with that, out these same.
Two to three percent.
Back in 2014, they're adjustable. So that's another factor. We certainly have been able to adjust them down when we had the depletion, right? So they're supposed to be adjusted too much. So I agree with that.
And the kind of things we can do is when we put in the bushel limit decrease, we said, this is how many trips reach the bushel limit. This is how many bushels were caught. If we decrease the limit, what are the savings? So we can have before and after comparisons. And if this is something the committee wants us to look into, that's the kind of data we would look at again.
2 to 3% of the people reaching, it just seems like that's a, such a small amount. It should be easy.
I would bet everything you propose is half a million pounds. After December and everything. I don't know about the March, though. The March could be tricky.
Wouldn't it be better to go for it?
Boom.
If you go for it separate, it's going to be a lot easier than throwing everything.
What's that?
If you go for it separate, you might get it. If you throw all that on the table, they're going to wash it all away. That looks like a lot.
We need to find out what it is. I mean, you're busy. I know how busy you are. We're just going to the commission now on the 28th of May and asking for the public hearings. That's what we're doing. If you do want to see what this all amounts to, we can show you. In other words, you're all on email as far as I know. Is everyone on email?
There's a couple people who prefer mail, but we have emails for them.
Okay. So we'll work on this. We'll send you those results. But I recommend that tonight you act as if these are what the items that you want changed. And stand on those as your placeholders, and then we'll let you know. You'll be able to see what we're going to take to the commission, which won't be till June. I mean, May is just to ask for the hearings. So, okay?
Mr. Chairman, I'd
yes,
like
sir.
To make one motion anyway.
Go ahead.
That is that we take these three subjects up individually and take a vote on each one.
I think that sounds wise.
Absolutely.
Anybody second?
I second the motion.
Everybody vote on it?
Everybody all right with that?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think? Should we go, let's start with fall first? I think that's probably the most relevant, wouldn't you say, Rob? Mm-hmm. Is that all right with the committee, though? So start fall and how long?
Season extension and limits.
How long do you think?
I think it's December 27th.
December 27th.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to get a year-round fishery. That's obvious.
Correct.
Because of caution.
Right.
So let's be more realistic and go with that. I mean, that's my opinion.
And tell us why you like the 27th, would you, sir?
Why?
Yes.
So I don't have to go oyster scraping or horn dogging. That's why.
That's why you.
Yeah. I mean, also it's a good market. I look at this as the economics of the fishery. I mean, I'd rather catch my crabs when they're $40 or $50 than $20. And I mean, that's the reality of it. I make more money.
Right.
Any
other discussion from down that end? Agree, not agree?
I think
Christmas 20th
would be a better date.
Mr. Chairman.
And I can also say I have started looking into a December extension. If we look at 2012, 2013, 2016, when we did have December seasons, 2012, we had an average daily of harvest of about 10,000 just went blank. About 10,000 pounds. 2013, low effort December. That was about 2,000 pounds. And 2016, it was 5,000 pounds a day. If we carried the 2016 season where we went to December 20th, that would have added about, I think, less than 1% of the 2018 harvest. If we said we fished in 2018 like we did in 2016, going until December 20th, it would have been about 1% of the harvest.
And that's total crabs, everything. You're not separating male and female. That's what I was getting to before. If we're protecting females, then your number
20th would be 3 weeks.
I did look into just female. I don't have those numbers to hand.
So you're overall.
But they are things we can pull.
Yeah, we're trying to protect the females at this point, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. So really.
I don't know if they're going to give you 3 weeks. They might give you two.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Three before, so.
We forgot something. I've said it many times and never happened again in my lifetime, but when we when we extend the crab season to way in December, if there ever is another judge crab fishery, which I doubt there ever will be, then we'll have to come back and change this crab potting thing. That's going to interfere with dredging and all that, so we need to be careful what we do. We need maybe not look here, but look off there a little ways. We haven't forgot about crab dredging, have we? Mm-hmm. I don't think it ever happened again, but I'd hate to put the nail in the coffin by having to come back and say, uh-oh, now.
Let me ask a question.
Yes, sir.
Did you do this every year?
That's up to advisors. That's up to the commission.
I mean, every year we come to this vote, we're going to extend it 2 weeks or 3 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of doing it for definite time?
Season's been changed.
Yeah, right now it's year to year. So it's 2012, we were till the 15th, December 15th. 2013, we were till the 15th. 14 and 15 started November.
That's a good point. We can basically say we don't want any change and let it ride like it is, or we can come back and say with the option of changing it each year.
Right.
That way we don't put a nail in our coffin.
All right, this end of the table.
Just for clarification, we're talking about the three options: early season,
fall right now,
early season, late fall season, and bushel limits.
Correct.
Yes, sir. All three of them obviously are debatable. I know right now, I think all of us here will agree, we're not going to get probably one of them. Okay, so let's break it down. Maybe have a vote on the three. Instead of wasting a lot of time on each, because I know we all know there's only going to be one that's going to make it. So if we can vote on who wants to agree on an early season debate, late season debate, or bushel limit debate, it will narrow the scope of our focus right here. Because I don't want to talk about December, personally. Anybody have any objections to doing that? Mm-hmm. Just to cut to the chase?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I agree. I got things to do tonight.
All right, so we'll take a vote on late season closure. All in favor, say aye. All right. Adjusting fall bushel limits. All in favor.
Aye.
Great, raise your hands if you would. I'll keep mine down. 3-6. Yeah, well, damn, that's got it right there.
Now, if I don't mind having the floor again.
Yes, sir. You've made progress.
In our last meeting, we sat here in length and talked about how we'd like to change this fishery. And we heard from several people here that in the October timeframe of the year, we're losing a lot of watermen to go oystering. And as we've alluded to tonight, the oystering thing does not look very good right now. And as in terms of what it's going to look like come October, it's probably going to be dramatically different from what people thought it would be. From what we saw on this graph today, we're seeing Maryland catching more females in late fall than ever before, or they're approaching our numbers now. And that could be twofold, because our guys are exiting to go oystering because either there's not enough money to keep them crabbing, or the limit got reduced to where they don't want to go crabbing anymore and they can make more money oystering, which I think is probably the case. We talked about stacking license the other week about, because of the limit reduction, they can't make enough money with one person on a boat. So we also debated that if we changed the limit in the fall, that would address that situation, potentially. So now that we've got this survey come out on the front page of the paper with all this good news, and knowing on this committee that we're not going to be able to get everything we want, we're going to get probably one ask, then I think we need to be mindful of that ask, because we are operating in a cautionary situation still. I make a motion that we increase the bushel limits to extend throughout the season from whatever it is in October through November and close the fishery down November 30th.
Ron,
if I could just add a little bit of information so everybody's on the same page. The major part of the female migration from Maryland to the Lower Bay happens in the fall. So that's probably why they're catching, that might be why they're catching more and more at that time of year. So just keep that in mind while you're formulating your ideas.
I'm going to ask something about the Maryland licenses after we make this motion, because I'm not done with Maryland on Virginia crabbing.
I'll second
his motion. Keep the limit staying.
Cut the season.
Right.
Right.
So the motion is, again, Mr. Graham, would you repeat it so everybody's got it?
Just extend the limits to whatever they are in October, which is what?
47, 29, 21.
Knowing that two out of five, or two and five,
two out of three, two to three,
it's nominal. Okay. It's nominal.
So you extend limits of October through the rest of the season.
Yep.
And close the season,
which would hopefully address the, you know, exodus of watermen,
right,
to the oyster fishery,
right,
and offer balance to these fisheries.
Right.
And we don't want all of our guys leaving to go put all the stress over here.
November 27th is your close date, you said?
Whatever it is.
November 30th? What is it?
Yes.
November 30th.
Yes.
I'll second it.
So we have a second. All right. Well, yeah, we definitely have a discussion. Mr. Cox says he wants to say something right off the bat here.
I want to see what he thinks about that.
Oh, well, hang on. We got a head shaker down here.
I just,
Sam,
you know, you're going to give up possibly 15 days or whatever that we could harvest crabs, and then December 1st we're going to go oyster scraping, I guess, and catch whatever we can catch. I just don't see. To me, it's ridiculous to even think that. We have an opportunity to extend the season possibly. I'm sure staff would most likely approve of that. You know, I agree with the bushel limits. If you want to make it, it's 1 or 2% more. But closing the season when we could possibly get an extension is wrong.
Okay.
My opinion.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Sanford. Anybody else down that end table?
One question.
Yes, sir.
Rob?
Yep.
The sanctuary rules in November. Do we have any in the fall like we do in the spring? I don't participate in the... in
September 15th is the end of the prohibition. Is that what you're talking about?
The crab sanctuary?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's different dates, but, you know, anywhere from May 9th to June 1st in the upper area to September 15th.
Oh, September
15th.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, do I have to deal with that?
All right. Mr. Cox, you had a question for Rob.
I was wondering how Rob felt about that motion just been made.
I think it's a good motion. I think I don't have all the data at hand. Alexis looked at some of it, but if it's 2 to 5%, the only thing I'm not sure about, and it's on the conservative side, I'm not sure the oyster fishery has dragged out a lot of harvesters in November, because I know I've looked at this data back when the oysters were not doing too well. And you typically have 530, 540 harvesters in October.
Come up the James River,
it drops down in November.
Pardon? Come up where we're crabbing at, and when the oyster rigs go in, the pots come out.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that the number of participants has dropped for years, even before the oyster fishery started to move up. So. But that's on the plus side too.
Well, let me ask you this, Rob. Would it be too crazy for us to, instead of a November 30th, sort of float the idea of a December 15th? You know, go out a couple more weeks.
I mean, we can do that. I don't know whether Johnny's 95% accurate on the one pass, but it's going to come down to us being conservative with our projected harvest.
Right.
So Alexa mentioned the 2012 extension. When we came in 2013, the commission had us do bushel limits just to make up for that harvest.
Right.
And then in 2014, we started the bushel limits.
Well, you had a target in mind, and we had to hit the target.
Yeah.
That's right. We didn't even get the target.
So, but there's no reason we can't ask for both. If you have a committee preference, it sounds like you do, then if the commission is, you know, sort of saying, well, wait a minute, you know, you're going too fast, back to your bushel.
I'm just saying, I don't want to sacrifice a whole month of cutting. If I go from, for instance, 47 to 27, so 20 bushels a day, how many days do I go crabbing in a month? I don't know, 24, 25. I crab every day I'm allowed.
Yeah.
I don't want to sacrifice that to have to run the boat for another 15 days. I mean, that's where I'm...
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't want to lose it on one end and try to just drag it out. I don't need any practice fishing pots. You know what I mean?
Right, I hear you. But if you're finished, you can,
But you can decide when you want to finish.
Yeah, well, no, if it was extended, I just don't want it to extend and then not on the and not get the bushel limits raised. You know what I mean?
So
the bushel limits raised,
Chairman,
I'm all for extending.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I hear you. Rob, you...
Sorry.
I hear you.
Mr. Chairman, if the committee has a preferred option, staff brings the preferred option. If the committee has a secondary option, we bring that as a secondary option.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well,
I got a question.
Rob, will you?
Just another point of information. You said that the option of extending the season in December also carries with it the risk that temperatures are going to drop earlier and crabs won't be active.
You might not catch none.
Yeah. It's every year.
I know it's every year, but I'm just saying.
You get to call
one.
I need to get a clarification.
Yes, sir.
Bushel limits start November 1st. Is that correct?
They drop.
Yeah,
they drop.
Okay, to 27 for you.
Yeah, for 47.
Right. Okay. How would you feel about going to the 15th and then drop it?
I mean, I would rather just see November keep the bushel limits, and then if we're able to open in December, I would definitely go crabbing in December. Now I'm all for crabbing in December, but I just don't want to cut out anything in November because the market's good. You're finally starting to catch crabs. There's a lot better chance you're going to do good in those November 1st through the 30th than what you are December 1st through the 15th. Mm-hmm. It's almost money. It's money in the bank from November 15th to November 30th. After that, it's kind of. I mean, it's like you said, it's a crapshoot. I just don't want to. I mean, I don't want to risk. I don't want to leave a dollar to chase a dollar.
You make a really good point.
You know what I'm saying? I'm all for crabbing into December, but I just don't want it to. I would like to get us to be full steam to the end of the year. And then if there's still enough room, I would gladly go crabbing, but it's just If I had the choice, I would leave it and take the 47 month and run as hard as I could run.
Yeah.
I mean, that's if it's open, I'm going crabbing. Even if the limit was reduced in December, would be one thing because I think it would be hard pressed to catch it. November, I just really think that, I mean, it makes it hard to compete with the other states. I mean, it's like, the interstate commerce is out the window because the guys from North Carolina, I'm sure he can tell you, and the guys from everybody else is putting all these crabs on the market, and you got your measly 27 bushels, and you tell the buyer, oh, we're on a limit, and he really doesn't care.
Right. Mr. Graham, you had something you wanted to say?
Yeah, just to echo that, it's the same argument. It's the same. Marshall's arguing, March 1st, we're going to argue December 15th. Both of those are crapshoot. Mother Nature is going to dictate the temperature. The probability is probably little to none that it's going to happen. So why even ask for it? If we know we have a higher probability of success ending in November, why do we go off the edge and say, let's go to December 15th and ask for something we really don't need?
Looks like a lot when that press release comes out.
That's what you're saying. You don't need it. Maybe I do.
I'm saying that the probability... That's going to go through is going to be 1 in 10, where November is going to be 8 out of 10. That's what I'm saying.
You understand. Anybody else got some thoughts on this? We've heard from a goodly number of us.
Can you repeat your motion?
The motion, again, is to extend the limits of all the way out, for the October limits all the way to November 30th, with a close on November 30th.
It goes back to what I'm asking.
It's a simple motion in many regards. That
was second and voted.
That was second and voted.
Seconded.
Not voted, excuse me. You're right. So, all right, so we've had enough discussion.
Well, I'd like to amend that motion.
You want to amend the motion?
Yeah, I want to amend it. So, basically, adjust the bushel limits, to where it's 47 for 10 days all the way through, the end of the season, but I'd like to amend it to December 17th, 15th closure.
Well, would you accept the amended motion of the closure date to December 15th?
I mean, I'm just saying it just seems like if you ask for all that, why can't we just ask for that both? Why can't we ask for both? Ask for that. If they're good on that, then can we ask for the extension? I mean, I'm all for it, but I just find it hard to believe they're going to let us get all the way to December 15th and the bushel limit's extended. That just seems like I'm all for it 100%, but I just don't think
they're going to get the cup.
I mean, the way this should be looked
at. This one's got 500 pot licenses, and very few of them.
Well, I mean,
you're not helping that many people.
He's helping himself.
I think the way this should
yourself
be looked
himself,
at
one is anybody else. My opinion.
Wait until next year, and I don't mean to, you know, tell you anything that you don't know. If you pile on with these options,
yep.
it probably won't go very well.
Yep.
You have a straightforward option on the bushel limit. We have some advantages to tell the commission that right now, even if we double, I would think, and we'll go through that, that we're still not going to add any risk. The unknown of December is unknown. When's the last time we had December? 17?
16.
So it hasn't been there for 2 years. But the commission can certainly be alerted that if things go well with what we do this year, and if we get a somewhat similar report card from the Winter Dredge Survey next time around, that everyone's going to be interested in maybe also adding December, or at least some of you might be interested. It sounds like some of you aren't, but I mean, I think that'd be the way to approach it. That's just my advice.
Yes. Okay. Well,
I mean, I think we should, if that's what he thinks we should support, I mean, the way things traditionally go, I think that'd probably be the best way to go. I mean,
okay. So you're saying you don't want to amend your motion?
No.
Okay. All right. So.
Repeat the motion one more time, Mr. Chairman, so we're all clear.
One more time. It's no problem. Easy to say. Extend the limits of the October through the whole rest of the season, and the whole rest of the season will end on November 30th.
You had a second on it.
We had a second, yes, sir, Mr. Diggs. So, we ready to call the question? Any more comments?
I got one more comment.
Yes, sir.
Before I started to make this motion, Rob, when you guys were talking, how quick is our data in terms of a trigger? How quick can we get a trigger? We can't get one. It has to be an emergency regulation, or we got to roll the dice right now and hope we get it, pretty much.
Yeah.
We can't work on triggers.
No. The data are still delinquent in a lot of cases. I know we have mandatory reporting. I would think in an ideal situation, we're only a month behind.
We just want to push it
about 3 or a little bit more months behind.
So we got to ask for the pie right now, even though we may or may not get it. We got to ask, at least ask right now, with no triggers. It could be a disaster the rest of the summer. We're asking for something we probably want.
How do you propose the whole? How do you propose the whole motion and have it as contingency? Maybe VMRC will let them make the decision. I'm okay with asking for it. I'll let them decide. Are they okay with doing it like
that?
They
are going to decide.
Are they going to decide? I just don't. If you go there with all of it and wipe it all away, you've got nothing. I mean, if there's a way you can break it down and let them say, you know, if things look good, I mean, the crabbers and everybody should know if things are going good. You should know if it's bad, everybody's going to be calling down there crying. And if it's good, everybody's going to be calling wanting their licenses because they got sick and this, that, and the other. So, I mean, it's pretty simple. Like I said, I mean, I'm down for, but I just think if you roll it all into one, it's just, I mean, if it all gets shot down, then we get nothing. That's, I mean, I'm down with both of them, but I just think if you propose it and let them, they'll know, they're going to talk, they'll know.
Oh, Rob, one thing, you will relay sort of the discussion and sort of the angst that we have here making this particular...
You're famous because we'll have a report on your meeting, okay?
Right.
So we'll have a report on your meeting.
What we've said tonight,
you have a motion,
go away.
You have a motion.
Right.
The whole motion that you're talking about is, I think it'd be better if we relayed what happened at the meeting, what the main motion was, and the fact that the committee is willing to, next year, also, if things are somewhat similar, ask for a December extension, such has been in place for 3 years, 2016, 13, and 12. Yeah, okay.
And that there were, and we'd also say there were many on the commission who wanted to do that, but the sacrifice they felt, many thought, was too great.
I mean,
the potential sacrifice.
The committee, quite frankly, is, you know, being conservative by not trying to.
So we will relay that.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
All right. So I think let's call for the question on the motion. All in up, Rob?
Just FYI, if it matters, I'd be in support of that as well.
Oh.
Okay.
So I'm just.
And when you say that, tell me one more time the.
Bushel.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. So all in favor? Is everybody good with the motion? We've
just
repeated it. We can repeat it one more time. Everybody good?
Yes.
Repeat it one more time.
Oh, yes, sir. Okay. I think I've got it down now. We're going to extend the limits of October through the rest of the season. The end of the season will be November 30th.
So the bushel limit that is in October will now be the bushel limit until the end of the season.
Which will be November 30th.
November 30th.
Okay. All right. So the question, all in favor, signify by raising your hand, aye.
Aye.
So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. Okay. That motion carries. Well, fellas, you know.
And next year, maybe next year we can either go to the spring or later in December, maybe.
And I will relay that.
Yeah. I think we've done our best we can. I know it won't be as well. You abstain. Okay. So we have one abstention. And then we want to let's count our nays. All not in favor signify by saying nay and raising their hand.
Nay.
Two. Okay. Well. Mr. Grant?
For discussion now, right?
Yes, sir.
Can somebody educate me why Marylanders can get crabbing licenses in Virginia and Virginians can't get them in Maryland? And why we haven't been to the General Assembly to try to do something about that?
Let's go back to
1980. I can't, Rob, but maybe you can give
us some
answer to that.
You can only vote in one state. You can't live in two states and, you know, pay taxes. Why are they allowed to come here and we can't go there?
The clues are out there earlier. Maryland, first of all, Maryland has blue crab and striped bass. Those are their prized species. Everyone knows that. We have a lot in Virginia. So they started early in 1979 with a limited entry proposal, this TFL, Total Fishing License. And they came back in 97 and made it even stricter. So the only way, you'd be on a waiting list, whether you're Virginia or wherever, and I think Ernie Bowden was one who may have been on a waiting list for a while, I'm not sure, and you apprentice essentially and then you get in the fishery, whether you're Marylander or whether you're Virginia. We don't have that. We didn't have that kind of system. That's the situation there. The other situation is about 10 years ago or 8 years ago, I can't remember exactly what, we got together with Maryland.
Let me cut you off.
Yes.
We tried that. And I want to remind everybody what happened. A handful of us carried this stuff through the General Assembly with the support of Harvey Morgan. Taylor Murphy got so tired of hearing it that there were fees going to be put on the watermen. He did not want to see a fee put on the watermen that was not put on the recreational fishermen at the same time. So we ended up with what we have now. There was a committee set up to address the whole thing through a
joint resolution
that Taylor Murphy put in.
Yeah.
And they had this whole roundtable thing. I was the only waterman on it. And every meeting that we had was about the recreational fishery and the charter fishery. We had one meeting on the commercial license. And the only thing that I was able to get included in there was that we could have limited entry on individual species. We couldn't limit the whole fishery. And all the discussion started about having an apprenticeship program and going through the apprentice program so that we could have young fishermen and stuff. All that stuff stopped when Taylor made that joint house resolution. And all the discussion in every one of those meetings was all about the recreational fishery. And that's how we ended up with what we have now.
Yeah.
And the bill was sent down for the commission to come up with the minor details of how to administer the thing. And that's how we ended up with our reporting system and everything else.
Right.
And the fees for the waterman side of it were supposed to pay for the reporting system.
And so after that, and you'll
that's
remember
why we got stymied where we are, and that's why we're stuck.
Yeah. And the other part that happened for Johnny is that about 8 to 10 years ago, Jack and I and folks in Maryland, we got together and tried to restructure the license fees because Maryland had raised its fee. Well, the way it turns out, if we raise the out-of-state fee here, then they raise
commensurate with that, the out-of-state fee there. North Carolina has the same situation. So essentially, we couldn't make any progress because if we tried to exclude through fees, all Maryland did was give the same increase to what we would have to pay, which was already higher than what they'd have to pay down here, which is like $445 for out-of-state hard
drive. I'll include another tidbit of information just from a couple of years ago. There was a bill put in, I can't remember who put it in, to change the out-of-state license fees and increase it or do something about it. Mike Hutt had a heart attack because...
That was his income.
Right.
Some of that went to his
right.
income.
You know, all the license fees is what runs marine products around. And if he lost that Maryland money, it was going to put his situation in such a bind. They had already cut the whole staff down to two people. Well, that situation is a little bit different now. I was chairman of that thing for several years. I just went off this year. JC, you know what the numbers are now. It's a lot better than it was, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Chairman, right?
But not all the license fees go towards it, but a big percentage of it does. Yeah.
Yeah. And Mike Hutt told all of us to back off because he was going to put the green product board in a real jam.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something you have to consider about all this stuff, too.
Yeah.
So there are Virginia watermen that have Maryland licenses.
There are, but they probably did it early, and they probably paid even a lot more then. And some of them are still alive, yeah.
So now you can. It's closed fishery?
Yeah.
Virginia residents?
But what I want to follow up on is the Marylander crabbers in Virginia. So we will look at that over the last few years. The Marylanders crabbing in Virginia.
Yeah,
I mean, in lieu of all the discussion with what they're doing, charts now recognizing what's going on in the fisheries, you would think that if we can't go there, but yet they can still come here, someone in the Senate, in the Richmond Senate, needs to put a bill in and say, we're going to change the game here.
How do we revisit that? Like,
it's got to be changed.
We've missed crab dredging and everything else. Why don't we revisit that? We've changed everything else. I mean, something's got to be done.
I mean, they're talking right now about doing away with the sponge crabs law up there. They're talking about reducing the males back down to 5 inches. I'm hearing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, they changed the sponge crabs last year or so.
But now they want to have them full time.
Okay.
Of course, there's a ridiculous law where they can't even buy our crabs.
Right.
They can't buy them and possess them in Maryland, which makes no sense.
Yeah.
But that helps me. But they're getting ready to do away with all that because...
Yeah.
The price of all the other crabs,
so
clean females, are so high
sure.
that's the only way they can be competitive is to buy sponge crabs. So now they love the sponge crabs, even though they can't catch them.
Yeah.
They can't buy them either after July.
Yeah,
they moved it to August 4th last year. August.
No, it's creeping up into the summer, and they're trying to get it completely exonerated, where they can buy them unlimited. So they're backing away.
Yeah. The 5-inch came up last year, but it was stymied.
Right.
Yeah, the 5-inch came up last year.
So. It's kind of like the beating the U.S. is taking with China. We're taking with Maryland.
Yep.
The crabs where you're working.
It is a political issue, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not a VMRC can't do anything about it. That's our state politician.
What the issue was that Fred Fisher had to deal with years ago was actually a federal law that Virginia could not put something on an out-of-state fisherman that they didn't put on their in-state fisherman. So they couldn't even charge them much of an increase in price other than what they figured it was taxpayer compensated in Virginia.
We all just went on the wrong side of the fence.
We refunded money because of that. Yeah.
Can we move on with the agenda?
We certainly can.
Thank you.
I think we are now with old business and review of requested agent data. And we're at 10 of 8.
So at the last meeting, we had some questions about agenting, demographics, harvest. So we prepared a couple slides for you. So this is total blue crab harvest in Virginia, and then the blue chunk at the bottom there is harvest by agents. It's an average about 9.3% a year.
10%.
That's something.
We also had questions about where are agents fishing. So on the left, you can see where reports from agents came in from, what systems they were in. And then on the right, you have reports from the whole fishery. So you can see a little bit where the numbers are changing to see where agents are more or less present. So, for example, Chesapeake made them, Chesapeake Bay, down in agents, James River's up, Chesapeake tributaries are up a little bit, Seaside Eastern Shore is down, York River down. And then, you know, we have a cap on how many agent applications are approved. Now, not every application that is approved is actually purchased. So the number approved you have there, 2016, 17, 18, 132, 124, 126, but sold is 123 down to 111. So there are a couple applications that were approved, but an agent permit was not purchased. And then for a little bit of the demographics, out of state driver's licenses, 8-9 a year. Family agenting, that we define that as an agent and a licensee who either share the same last name or address. So not a perfect system, but it's as close as we can get. 27, 31, 24. And then medical exceptions, 1, 1, and 3.
I've got a question. Your out-of-state holders or agents, are they using a Virginia license, I guess? Yeah. A Marylander, or say, a Maryland person mm-hmm. using a Virginia?
A Russian could use it.
License.
Right. It is so, someone who has an out-of-state driver's license
okay.
is agenting for a Virginia license.
So my question is, why are they allowed to fish? I mean, we charge Maryland more money to have an out. So why are they allowed to fish, say, you know, at my price, to put it bluntly? You know, when you actually charge Maryland, like you said, $445, why?
Might be a little higher even. But
yeah, I mean, that to me doesn't seem right.
I think the idea is the agent is the licensee. So if this is an out-of-state licensee with an out-of-state agent, they're essentially the same person.
Okay. So it is an out-of-state license using an out-of-state agent.
Well, I don't know. That's
I got a problem when you got out-of-state people or out-of-country people, and you got people on damn waiting list been on that 10 years or more. Well, I got a real big problem with that live in Virginia.
That's 9% of the harvest.
Yeah.
Almost equal to what crab dredging was.
Yeah.
Okay. How many people's on the crab waiting list?
Right now?
26.
I'd say it's about 180 to 200, somewhere in there, from 800 to 800.
Yeah, you've got 111 that should be. You know, I got big problems with that.
9% of the harvest.
Yeah.
That's our extension for December.
Well, your crab dredge fishery, what was that, like 11%?
Of course, now you're going to have to be
utilized. I don't know. I don't have that number.
I mean, it was 10%.
Most of the people got another job.
Like that. Seems like to me if you did away with agents.
Wouldn't crab dredging, when we close it, 10% of the harvest?
Yeah.
Well, I closed in 2008,
yeah.
So it was only a little less than 5 million pounds.
So basically, we got more agents than we put people with licenses. We closed the whole fishery, and then we're letting out of country people and everybody else fish. That's really crazy.
The problem I have with agents where I am, and this situation might be the same thing for Mark, it's a spatial thing. They're taking up room that a lot of us have feel displaced by other people that have hired an agent mm-hmm. and doubled up on their rig because they have an agent. They just kind of shove you to the side. That's what's happened to us. So.
and they're doing something else.
Yeah, and they're doing something else. They're not even there.
No, they're still working on the water where I'm at.
Yeah, they're still working on the water, but you've got somebody else doing that too.
You know, they're doing two jobs on the water, basically, is what they're doing. So, I mean, you know, whatever. I think agents are wrong, you know. I mean, I can understand the medical hardship. I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. But, you know, the agent thing with the closed fishery, and you have a closed dredge season, you've got people on a waiting list still. I've got a problem with it.
You don't have any problem with me. I have agents. I think it's crazy myself.
You know, medical hardship, I understand.
All I can tell you, if you had it in the hardship business, it would be a disaster.
They would.
Well, but is there any motion we can make on this? Is there anything we can do, Rob? I mean, it seems to me. I mean, does anybody on this commission think the agents are a good idea? Raise your hand.
You think they're good?
One person thinks agents are good out of all of us.
This has been talked about many, many, many times. Many, many times. And I don't know what the solution is. Yes, it's true that the commercial fisherman registration license, the old blue card that you remember that started out, at least progress was made on that, because now you are down to, if you had a medical problem in the year that you did not renew it, you can get that card back. But that's it. No exceptions. And I watched a lot of harvesters come into the fishery just by saying, I've been a waterman all my life, and you look and they've never had a license, but in they came. And that hit the fan when those in the oyster fishery said, wait a minute, people are still coming in as exceptions and they're going into the oyster fishery. And that's probably part of the 985 licenses we have right now.
They'll still be on their job somewhere if they're waiting for that happening.
But that was closed off in 2015. So if you want to work towards either streamlining this more or closing it off, it's going to take more than a motion tonight. I can tell you that.
Well, we voted not too long ago, a couple years ago, to drop it 25 a year, and it didn't happen.
Well, it went from 156 down to 125.
Yeah.
The strange thing about the agents, because I looked, but I haven't looked this year, and we have used all 125 agents this year. What was odd to me was when it started out, it was anyone who had a 2012 license or transferred that 2012 license. They got first serve as an agent. For 1 year, 2013, most of those folks were 2012 licensees. After that, it's been a lot of new entrants, and you know that's gone by the books on the 2012 licensees, which is what your committee came up with. So it does deserve attention, but it's something that you gotta spend a meeting to get it right, I think, and get it to where. You know, there are some cases there are some cases in the peeler fishery still where, you know, agents are pretty valuable. And then I guess the question is, what else do people do? So Mark just said, well, the agent's working and also the licensee's working doing something else. I mean, you know, what kind of conditions would you want to put on that? But when push comes to shove, everything when it started back in 1993 was medical hardship or active military. Those are the only exceptions, although there was a case where the commissioner could, if someone had a medical problem that was only going to last a little while, there could be someone to take care of his gear. And then it blew up from there. So you've had 26 years, and, I mean, exceptions started coming out of everywhere.
I mean, how can someone that has an agent, how can he be doing something else on the water when his license is supposed to be with the agent?
He should
because his license is with the agent. On the boat.
The law says the agent has to have a license. Yes, he does.
Yeah. Well, he's on a boat working as really underneath somebody's license as crew, right. Even though he's running the operation.
Casey's right. If I'm your agent, I've got your license.
Exactly.
And your gear license.
And I had a weekend, and that's what I had. I got a lot of home cases
a year. He's working. He's actually taking somebody else's card.
Well,
and running.
Should we make this an agenda to think that we're not going to solve anything tonight on agents?
No, but I can tell you one thing you would solve, what I just mentioned. I mean, I'm serious. There are people still today who they're dumbfounded that they can't hold on to their license
and have an agent doing something else, which is illegal.
Right. You know, so which your...
That would help. I mean,
working so it would enforce the law we have.
Yeah.
I mean, can you change the wording of the law? Make it, if you have an agent, you cannot work on the water whatsoever? Or not? I mean...
I don't know how you do that. I mean, you can't legally.
You can't or can?
You can't. I mean, if you don't have a license, how do you work on the water? If your agent
has
a license.
He's actually an agent for somebody else, more or less.
Yeah. Well, it's a shell game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know.
So, Rob, what could we do then? You're alluding to...
You have to get some veteran folks here to help figure this out.
Well, I think one thing we need to, as an interstate person, I think we could do away with that one. If you don't live in the state of Virginia, you shouldn't have to
that's
get
a minor. That's, I don't mean this mean it's minor, but it's a minor part because any person can be an agent, regardless of whether they're from Texas or Maryland. That's just the way the law
is. In other words, I could bring a Russian over here and he could go be my agent.
I heard you're Russian before. Yes, you could.
But he has to have your license, though. He's got to have your license on him. So if he's out of the water doing something else,
Kim Jong over here
could possibly get up.
So, Mr. Chairman, how many harvesters are out there at any one time, depending on the summertime, the springtime, the fall, and the Marine Police are not going to be able to check everyone.
Right.
Not be able to do that. So whatever you do, you have to make it so they don't have to check anyone.
What we can do, just for data gathering, is we can see who had an agent in a year and was still working on the water elsewhere.
Yeah, but he's just all they're doing is basically using somebody else's license.
Right.
You know, I mean,
right, but we can see if MRC IDs overlap.
Let's do that.
Is the fee to be an agent the
it's
same?
It's a bad thing to let go by. This is what it is.
There's no fee.
My opinion.
There's no fee. So there's no penalty to be an agent because you got some other income coming in and you let somebody else do you. He's making money and he doesn't have time to do this, so someone else can do it for him. So that ought to be the stimulus to keep him out, or a deterrent, if you will, a hurdle. You want to be an agent or act as an agent in this fishery, your fee is three times higher than the guy that's working every day.
So the commission,
that's what I'm saying.
A new license or permit.
You goddamn pay for it.
That's the law. $100 in the U.S. Yeah, agents have been.
I've got no problem with it. Yeah. If you've got a license, you've got a Mexican
I think so. Can we make this a topic for our next meeting? Let's do that. I think I will give it its fair due. I mean, everyone here except for one of us wants to do something about it.
Realistically, having the next meeting where you really can afford to be here. Is probably not going to be in the next couple of months, I'm guessing. Right? If it is, I'll be happy.
Do what I got
to
do.
We need to figure out if we're going to have this situation resolved before next year.
Next year. So that needs to be our target, getting this resolved before.
Even if we have to do it in the fall or something.
Yeah.
But if you have meetings throughout the year, you can put a little information and go back and look. You don't got to swallow the whole thing and just bang on it every time a little bit. I mean, you got. I'll wait till next year.
We can find out your availability. You know, as we go forward here, and when enough of you say, yeah, we can come to a meeting, we can do it. But I'd like to see all 13, if possible, or at least 11 or 12, be available for that. And that would be the whole meeting. I mean, you would be working on the agent. I think it's worth it because it's come up so many times.
Yes.
So why don't we do that? We'll be polling the committee members as to when, you know, we'll give you certain dates, not in the real immediate future, but when the dust clears a little bit, and then we'll have a meeting on that.
Okay. All right. Everybody good with that?
It is something that's doable.
All right. So we stand adjourned.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
One more question, Rob.
Yes,
please. Is there any chance that we can get these meetings at 5 instead of 6?
Yeah, we'd love that.
It
takes us 2 hours to get home.
That's past my time.
I might look that up to see how they did it.
Graduation's 2 weeks.
I'd like to get four, but some of them said it was making
better for everybody to make it.
We can put a poll out with availability for the next meeting. We can ask what time people can get here.
You want to do it at 4, it worked for us, too.
I'm good at 4. Follow me.
We can look at some of these things.
I've been writing down.
What's that, sir?
So,
instead of being 6 to 5, a full, it's a whole lot better.
Catch up with Rob.
We got a 2-hour drive. Get on.
Yeah.
6 to 5 would split it.
Yeah.